I'm Christine Sandy, and I'm the Program Director of the Rural Health Information Hub. And I'd like to welcome you to today's webinar, where we'll be discussing the 2024 Physician Fee Schedule Final Rule. We have provided a copy of the presentation on the RHI Hub website, and that's accessible through the URL on your screen. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our speakers for today's webinar. And first, we'll hear from Sarah Heppner, who is the Associate Director of the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy within the Health Resources and Services Administration. And the Federal Office have helped us coordinate this webinar. So we'll hear some opening remarks from Sarah. Then we have some speakers from the Hospital and Ambulatory Policy Group within the CMS Center for Medicare. Those include Lindsay Baldwin from the Division of Ambulatory Services, Gift T from the Division of Practitioner Services, Michelle Cruz, the Deputy Director of the Division of Ambulatory Services, and Michelle Franklin, who also is within the Division of Ambulatory Services. And then we'll have some speakers from the CMS Center for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation. And that includes Dr. Colleen Barbaro, who serves as the model lead for the Medicare Diabetes Prevention Program, as well as Tina Cooley, who leads the marketing and outreach efforts on the Medicare Diabetes Prevention Program team in the Division of Healthcare Delivery. So at this point, I will turn it over to you, Sarah.
Thank you so much, Christine. And also thank you to all of the great folks who work at RHI Hub for hosting this webinar. And of course, I want to thank our colleagues at CMS for the work that you do day in and day out, as well as for taking the time to join us today. I would be remiss if I didn't pause here and mention that our partnership with CMS is absolutely integral to the work that we do within the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, within our Section 711 authority to advise the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services on the potential impacts of Medicare and Medicaid policy on rural communities and providers. Today, as you all know, we're going to be talking about the calendar year 2024 Physician Fee Schedule Final Rule, which was published late last year. And this webinar is actually a follow-up to something that we tried to do a little over a year ago, or we actually did do a little over a year ago, where we pulled our CMS colleagues together to talk about the calendar year 2023 final rule. And we received a lot of positive feedback from our stakeholders about that first webinar. So we're excited to continue this series with CMS by bringing information from the 2024 final rule to our rural stakeholders and partners. This webinar, of course, is going to cover behavioral health and telehealth, but also community health integration services and the behavioral health billing codes for marriage and family therapists and mental health counselors, RHC and FQHC updates, the annual wellness visit, the associated optional social determinants of health risk assessment, evaluation and management updates, caregiving services updates, and the Medicare Diabetes Prevention Plan. So that is a lot to cover in 90 minutes. And we really want to thank again for creating a forum where our CMS colleagues could talk about what they did, how they did it, why they did it around these topics. And we also want to make sure that we are creating a space for you all to chime in and ask questions to make sure that you have the best understanding possible for how these things can be implemented in rural communities. So given that, I'd like to once again thank our CMS colleagues for doing this webinar with us, and I will turn it over to you to get started.
Thank you, Sarah, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for your time and attention this afternoon. As Sarah mentioned, a bunch of us from CMS are here to present a lot of the topics that were covered in the CY 2024 Physician Fee Schedule. I'm gonna start us off and you'll hear from a number of my colleagues to touch on different topics. So on November 2nd, as most of you are aware, 2023, the CMS issued a final rule that includes policy changes for Medicare payments under the Physician Fee Schedule and other Medicare Part B issues effective for January 1, 2024, and we're in 2024, so a lot of those services are currently being furnished by practitioners out there. Just as an overview, the Physician Fee Schedule announces policy changes for Medicare payments under PFS for CY for all of the calendar years cover from a payment perspective, but specifically for 2024, a lot in this year's rule. And, you know, as much as we're going to cover some topics, there's a lot that we're not covering because other parts of the agency also announced their policy changes in the rule. So Just for a full comprehensive review of what's in the rule, I advise you to go into the rule and certainly read that. But we'll cover the topics that Sarah had mentioned at the top of the call. Okay, so as I mentioned, some of the topics covered in the rule include our rate setting conversion factor, which is important for converting our relative value units into dollars. As most of you know, our topic of evaluation management services, this year we implemented complexity add-on code, which is crucial to practitioners that maintain a longitudinal and serve as a focal point for care for a lot of the patients that are Medicare beneficiaries. Behavioral health services, dental and oral health services, certainly our policies around telehealth services, which have been crucial during the pandemic, and as we come out of pandemic, really understanding what CMS considers from a regulatory and statutory framework for what will happen next. And for those services, caregiver training services, another crucial policy that we implemented this year, our social determinants of health risk assessment policy that we implemented, and some of our newest services that I know a lot of you are interested in, community health integration, CHI, and principal illness navigation services. And also, crucially, our policies around rural health clinics and federal qualified health clinics as it pertains to a lot of the topics that you see above and some others as well, too. So as I mentioned, the first topic, our PFS rate setting conversion factor, just think of this as a grab bag for converting all of our policies into actual payment rates, including some of the technical changes that we make year over year to better reflect the resources that go into furnishing a physician service. This year marks the third year of a clinical labor pricing update. In essence, us updating information on the wage rates paid to clinical staff as part of the makeup for physician service, and then also standard rate setting refinements that we make year over year to take into account the RVU changes, changes in practice of medicine, and different resource costs allocations that we consider under the PFS. It's also worth noting that the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023 provided for a temporary 2.5% increase in PFS payments for CY 2023 and a 1.25% increase for CY 2024. So it's a statutory provision that we implemented for 2024. So as you can see, in 2023 it was 2.5, but for 2024, 1.25. So in essence, a decrease of 1.25%. We usually, typically, almost always make budget neutrality adjustments per statutory authority, depending on if there's other statutory authority that we should also consider to the RVUs. And so in the combination of the RVUs and the expiration of the update to the conversion factor results in a conversion factor of $32.74, which is a decrease of $1.15 from the CY 2023 PFS conversion factor of $33.89. So our second topic touches on evaluation management services, and specifically the office outpatient evaluation management visit inherent complexity add-on code. Some of you may recall that CMS had first thought about this policy back in CY 2021, acknowledging that there are some instances that are not well accounted for in existing evaluation management coding. So this add-on code is our policy to better recognize resource costs associated with E&M visits for primary care and longitudinal care. It's going to be applicable, as I've mentioned a couple of times, for outpatient office visits specifically, not for the other E&Ms that are out there, as an additional payment, again, recognizing the inherent costs involved when a clinician is a continuing focal point for all needed services or part of ongoing care related to a patient's single serious condition or complex condition. And we've got a couple of examples that we threw into the rule for consideration, and we continue to work on sub-regulatory materials that we think might be helpful, just given the conversations that we've had with a number of you, interested parties, practitioners, about when to think about billing for the service. But for example, a primary care clinician as a continuing focal point for all needed healthcare services for a patient, often there's a cognitive load, responsibility, and accountability for building the most effective trust relationship possible amidst evaluating management, managing other healthcare problems during a visit. So building that longitudinal relationship is a key aspect of providing such care as we've described, and will make the patient more likely to comply with treatment recommendations of the visit during future visits. So just think primary care generally and what happens during those encounters. So that's what we've recognized in the implementation of this add-on code, and certainly are hearing a lot of feedback on how the service might be implemented going forward, on other considerations that we'll continue to think about as we gain more experience with the code. Okay, so as we also mentioned, there's a lot of policy that crosses over into the setting of rural health clinics and federally qualified health clinics. So I will try to cover this at a high level, but we do have our RHC and FQHC experts here as well to hold me accountable. So as most of you know, RHCs and FQHCs are not paid according to the complexity of the patient. CMS pays encounter rate for each billable visit that accounts for all the services furnished to a beneficiary for the day, some exceptions. So the services described by HCPCS code G2211 are accounted for in the payment of the billable visit for that day. RHCs specifically are paid under the all-inclusive rate methodology, and FQHCs are paid under the FQHC PPS. But HCPCS code G2211 is not paid separately in those accounts. Okay, and with that, I will turn it over to my colleague, Lindsay Baldwin, to walk you through behavioral health services.
Great, thanks, Gift. good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to walk through just a brief update on the policies in the behavioral health space that were included in the 2024 Physician Fee Schedule Final Rule. So first up is the new Medicare benefit for marriage and family therapists, or MFTs, and mental health counselors, or MHCs. These new benefits under Medicare were authorized by Section 4121 of the Consolidated Appropriations Act 2023, which provides for Medicare Part B coverage and payment under the PFS for the services of MFTs and MHCs, allowing these additional practitioner types to be able to enroll with Medicare and to bill independently for their services. One thing to flag here is that we also proposed and finalized to allow addiction counselors or drug and alcohol counselors who meet all of the applicable requirements to enroll in Medicare as mental health counselors. MFTs and MHCs were able to begin submitting their Medicare enrollment applications after the CY 2024 Physician Fee Schedule Final Rule was issued in November, and they're able to bill Medicare for services furnished on or after January 1st, 2024. The statutory benefit for enrolled MFTs and MHCs authorizes them to bill for services that are furnished for the diagnosis or treatment of mental illnesses, which can also include substance use disorders. And then lastly, we also made updates to the behavioral health integration codes under the physician fee schedule to allow MFTs and MHCs to be able to bill for those services as well. Next is psychotherapy for crisis services. These updates were also based on another section of the Consolidated Appropriations Act. This was Section 4123, which required the Secretary to establish new payment codes for psychotherapy for crisis services that are furnished in particular sites of service, which we defined really broadly as any place of service that's assigned a non-facility rate under the PFS. So that's anywhere other than the office setting. It can include the patient's home or a mobile unit. And these codes also took effect on January 1st, 2024. The CAA specified that these new psychotherapy for crisis codes, which the code numbers are G0017 and G0018, that these new codes would pay at 150% of the rate that is assigned to the existing codes describing psychotherapy for crisis. Okay, just a couple of other updates that were included in this final rule on behavioral health. So we also finalized an increase in the payment for timed behavioral health services under the PFS. Specifically, we finalized an adjustment to the work RVUs for all of the psychotherapy codes payable under the PFS. Specifically, that was a 19.1% upward adjustment, which we are implementing over a four-year transition. Also, in response to the public comments that we received back on the proposed rule, We also finalized the application of this adjustment to the psychotherapy codes that are billed along with an evaluation and management visit, and also to the health behavior assessment and intervention codes, or HBAI codes. We believe these finalized changes will begin to address some distortions that had occurred in evaluating time-based behavioral health services over the years. We also finalized a proposal to allow the health behavior assessment and intervention, or HBAI, services to be billed by clinical social workers, marriage and family therapists, and mental health counselors, in addition to clinical psychologists who were already able to bill for those codes. Okay, and with that, I will pass it off to my colleague, Michelle Franklin, to go over behavioral health services furnished in RHCs and FQHCs.
Thank you, Lindsay. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to go over the behavioral health services as it relates to RHCs and FQHCs. As mentioned earlier, Section 4121 of the CAA 2023 established coverage of MFT and MHC services and extended the scope of RHC and FQHC services to include those furnished by MFTs and MHCs. For RHCs and FQHCs, MFTs and MHCs are under the same umbrella as all other RHC and FQHC practitioners, and the services that they furnish will be billable visits. I would also like to mention that since MFTs and MHCs are now considered practitioners in RHCs and FQHCs, they do not have to enroll in Part B separately if they are an employee of an RHC or FQHC, and since they are considered practitioners in the same way as other RHC and FQHC practitioners, such as PAs, MPs, CPs, and clinical social workers, the RHC and FQHC will receive the RHC AIR payment amount or the FQHC PPS payment amount for their services. In addition, we finalized our proposal to revise the health and safety standards for RHCs and FQHCs with provisions that advance access to behavioral health in rural communities. And also, in wanting to be consistent with certain supervision policies under the physician fee schedule, we changed the required level of supervision for behavioral health services furnished incident to in RHCs and FQHCs from direct supervision to general supervision. I'm going to turn it over now to Gifty to talk about dental and oral health services. Thank you.
So picking up where Michelle left off, I'm going to quickly touch on our updates to our policies for dental and oral health services. Over the last several years, we've clarified CMS's payment policy for when there are dental services that are inextricably linked to medical services, covered medical services. And so this year, we've picked up our work in that space. Specifically, we codified previously finalized payment policy for dental services for head and neck cancer treatments, whether primary or metastatic. The codification to permit Medicare Part A, Part B payment for dental oral examinations performed as part of a comprehensive workup prior to medically necessary diagnostics and treatments to eliminate an oral dental infection prior to or contemporaneously with those treatment services and to address dental and oral complications after radiation, chemotherapy, and or surgery when used in the treatment of head and neck cancer. So our proposal generally and what we finalized permits payment for certain dental services and is strictly linked to covered services used to treat cancer prior to and during chemotherapy services, chimeric antigen receptor T, CAR T cell therapy, and the use of high dose bone modifying agents and anti-resorptive therapy. Additionally, in the rule, we sought comment on circumstances where evidence supports dental services being integral to the clinical success of a covered medical service. And that's become part of our process for discussing and meeting and capturing information from the healthcare delivery environment that we should consider under our payment exclusion. So in February of this year, and we are almost all the way through February, we have accepted and will be considering public submissions for potentially analogous clinical scenarios under which we can make payment for such dental services. So as I mentioned, the submissions help us think about what payment we should consider, and certainly that we can take through our rulemaking process. We also, as part of the process, engage with the Agency for Research and Health Quality. They're good partners in helping us to establish what evidence does exist for the clinical scenarios that folks submit to us for review. We certainly encourage folks to go out there and review ARC's July 2023 report on the efficacy of dental services for reducing adverse events and those receiving chemotherapy. There's certainly other reports that we'll be developing over time as we continue to review additional submissions under this process. Okay, now I'm going to switch gears and hop into our telehealth services policy under the physician fee schedule. So as you all no doubt know, telehealth has been transformative from a number of perspectives over the last several years, 4 years, if anyone's counting, since the pandemic started back in 2020. There's been a lot for us to consider, informed by legislative and statutory refinements to existing authority, and also our review of regulations and where we could be flexible, just given our objective of allowing continued access to services as appropriate for Medicare beneficiaries. So 2024, we're having to really think about what comes next. And the idea that as practitioners have gained experience furnishing these services, what makes sense to maintain, balancing safety, access, and frankly, making sure that the Benny's at the middle, in the middle of all our considerations. So we've certainly listened to interested parties, practitioners, and others that have thoughts for us to consider. And this year, as part of our proposal and what we finalized, we added health and well-being coaches services to the Medicare telehealth services list on a temporary basis for CY 2024. We also finalized the addition of G0136, the administration of a standardized evidence-based social determinants of health risk assessment tool. I talked about that a little earlier and we'll likely get into it in later slides, to the Medicare telehealth services list. This is an annual process, so we continue to take in requests and consider each year, and also consider the evidence that folks submit as part of the process. We also refined our process to analyze such requests, given just continued conversation with interested parties, making the process a little bit more streamlined as telehealth continues to grow as a payment policy topic. And so now we consider whether a service could be added to the telehealth list on a permanent basis because of the evidence that we have, or provisional basis, given that the evidence might still be under development, and allowing time for experience to be gained and shared with CMS. We also finalized that claims billed with place of service 10, which refers to when telehealth services are provided in a patient's home, would be paid at the non-facility PFS rate. Under the PFS, we usually think about the resources involved in furnishing a service and pay differentially based on how much resource we think overlaps with what we would be paying a facility under an applicable other payment system versus what we would pay under the PFS. And so we make that distinction by saying non-facility versus facility. We believe this policy, as we've implemented, will protect access to mental health and other telehealth services by aligning with some of the telehealth-related flexibilities that were extended via the Consolidated Appropriations Act in 2023. We also discussed the removal of frequency limitations for subsequent inpatient visits, subsequent nursing facility visits, and critical care consultations for 2024. We received a lot of comments from interested parties on how practitioners have been ensuring that Medicare beneficiaries receive subsequent inpatient and nursing facility visits, as well as critical care consultation services since the expiration of the PHE. So again, a lot of consideration for what is practically happening as practitioners are furnishing care to beneficiaries and making sure that there is appropriate balance with, again, the beneficiary at the center of all of our considerations. We also finalized a continuation of our revised direct supervision policy to permit the presence and immediate availability of the supervising practitioner through real-time audio and visual interactive telecommunications through the end of this year. We had solicited a comment on whether we should consider extending the definition of direct supervision to permit virtual presence beyond 2024. We received a lot of interest and input from interested parties on potential patient safety and quality concerns when direct supervision occurs virtually, which we'll consider for future rulemaking. Again, balancing access to care and appropriate care and what the practitioners have learned during the pandemic. Additionally, we also extended flexibilities to allow practitioners furnishing telehealth services from their home to report their office addresses on their enrollment forms. This extension aligns with other flexibilities that were extended via the CAA 2023. And we certainly are taking very seriously practitioners' concerns about privacy and safety, including their home addresses as practical locations on their enrollment forms. We also finalized our policy to allow teaching physicians in all training settings to be present using AV real-time communications technology when a resident is providing Medicare telehealth services consistent with other applicable telehealth policies. So think of that as a resident doing telehealth services being supervised by a teaching physician virtually. This virtual presence meets the requirements that the teaching physician can bill under the PFS for services involving the resident if they're present for the key portion of the service. And the policy applies in all teaching settings through December 31st, 2024. So another topic that we're actively thinking about as we move forward in rulemaking. Okay, and with that, I'll turn it over to Michelle Cruz to quickly cover telehealth services for RTCs and FQCs.
Thanks, Gift. Echoing on what you just heard from Gift, as required by the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023, we extended payment for telehealth services through December 31, 2024, and delayed the in-person requirements under Medicare for mental health visits until January 1, 2025. That is, for medical visits furnished via telehealth services using HCPCS code G2025, these services will be paid through December 31, 2024. The rates for G2025 are based on the average for all PFS telehealth services on the approved telehealth list. The calendar year 2024 payment rate for G2025 is $95.29. And also as a reminder, for calendar year 2022, we finalized to pay for mental health visits furnished via telehealth the same as an in-person visit. Then regarding direct supervision requirements, we are adopting the definition of immediately available to include virtual presence through the use of real-time audio and video interactive telecommunications through December 31, 2024 as well. And I believe I'm turning it back to Gift to discuss advancing health equity.
Thanks, Michelle. So a lot of crucial work in this space, in this year's rule, and in truth, it did begin last year with our recognizing specific coding that had been established by the AMA CPT, but it is consistent with a lot of work that CMS has done over several years. We're just doubling down on what makes a lot of sense from a number of perspectives, consistent with, you know, our mission as an agency and certainly the administration's broader policy objectives. So building on the agency's commitment to health equity and the Biden-Harris administration's executive orders to support caregivers, we did finalize separate coding and payment for several new services to help underserved populations, including addressing unmet health-related social needs that can potentially interfere with the diagnosis and treatment of medical problems. Paying for new navigation services to help people with cancer and other serious illnesses navigate their treatment, supporting family caregivers, paying for services involving community health workers to address health-related social needs that impact care, and enhancing access to dental care for people with certain cancers. Taken holistically, some of the largest policy changes in Medicare payment, again, putting patients at the center of the care they receive. So specifically on the caregiver training services, we finalized a proposal to make payment when practitioners train caregivers to support patients with certain diseases or illnesses. In carrying out a treatment plan, we will pay for these services when furnished by a physician or a non-physician practitioner, nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, certified nurse midwives, physician assistants, and clinical psychologists or therapists, physical therapists and occupational therapists or speech language pathologists, as part of the patient's individualized treatment plan or therapy plan of care. Again, consistent with recent Biden-Harris administration executive orders on increasing access to high-quality care and supporting caregivers. We also finalized coding and payment for social determinants of health risk assessment to recognize when practitioners are spending time and resources assessing SDOAs that may be impacting their ability to treat the patient. We finalized the addition of the risk assessment to the annual wellness visit as an optional additional element with additional payment and no patient coinsurance or deductible when provided with the AWV. We also finalized coding and payment separately for the SDOH risk assessment when it's furnished with an E&M or behavioral health visit. We also finalized coding and payment for monthly community health integration and principal illness navigation services to account for when clinicians involve auxiliary personnel, such as community health workers and care navigators, to support patients who have unmet needs that affect the diagnosis and treatment of their medical problems. And when certain patients with high-risk conditions need assistance connecting with appropriate clinical and other resources, again, navigating their treatment plans. So these services, as I've mentioned a couple of times, are all lockstep with broader agency goals, just our ongoing mission, of course, the Biden-Harris's initiatives, including the Cancer Moonshot Initiative, with the idea of improving the outcomes for patients. So the CHI and PIN services involve a patient-centered assessment to better understand the patient's life story, care coordination, contextualizing health education, building patient self-advocacy skills, navigating health system. So all the things that you would think matter in the context of putting the patient in the center of the care they're receiving, empowering the patient in ways that we have done before but are emphasizing more recently. We also finalized an additional set of PINCOs, practitioners we bill, when specifically supervising auxiliary personnel such as peer support specialists to support patients with behavioral health conditions that meet the qualifications of a serious high-risk illness as outlined in our PIN discussion. These services generally match the PIN requirements with some changes in the types of services provided to align with the existing standards of peer support work. Okay, and with that, I think I'll turn it back over to Michelle.
Thanks, Gift. For RHCs and FQHCs, when the Social Determinants of Health Risk Assessment, which is G0136, is furnished as an additional element of the annual wellness visit, one visit will be paid. That is, under the RHC all-inclusive rate methodology for RHCs or under the FQHC PPS, with the annual wellness visit adjustment for FQHCs. The same as in the PFS, there's no beneficiary cost sharing. When the SDOH risk assessment is furnished with a billable visit other than the annual wellness visit on the same day in an RHC, one visit will be paid under the AIR methodology and beneficiary coinsurance and deductible are applicable. For FQHCs, the SDOH risk assessment is not considered a qualifying visit. When the assessment is furnished in conjunction with a qualifying visit other than the annual wellness visit on the same day in an FQHC, one visit will be paid under the FQHC PPS and beneficiary coinsurance is applicable. In addition, with regard to the other health equity services, in addition, when community health integration services, principal illness navigation services, and principal illness navigation services that are geared for peer support specialists are furnished, RHCs and FQHCs may bill the General Care Management HCPCS code G0511, either alone or with a payable service. We'll talk a little bit more about how to bill these services in the next couple of slides. So in 2024, we expanded use of G0511. So when remote physiologic monitoring services and or therapeutic monitoring services are furnished, RHCs and FQHCs may bill that general care management HCPCS code G0511, either alone or with another payable visit. CMS revised the methodology to calculate the payment rate for general care management code G0511 to take into account how frequently the various services are utilized. That payment rate for calendar year 2024 is $71.71. CMS also clarified in the same context of general care management services, that direct supervision is not needed for beneficiary consent for chronic care management and virtual communication services. The General Care Management HCPCS code GO511 is comprised of the services listed in the table below. Only the codes listed below that correspond with these services can be billed as general care management under that HCPCS code GO511. When RHCs and FQHCs furnish services described by the codes below, they may bill GO511 multiple times in a calendar month, as long as all of the policy and coding requirements for each service are met and there is no overlapping of resource time. Each code listed below can be billed using HCPCS GO511 only once per calendar month for a single patient. For example, an RHC or an FQHC may bill RPM services using HCPCS code GO511 four times in a calendar month, once for each CPT code listed for RPM in the table below. I will now turn it over to Michelle Franklin to discuss IOP. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. So in the next two slides, I will go over intensive outpatient program services. Intensive outpatient program is a new benefit under Medicare. These services can be furnished in outpatient departments, community mental health centers, federally qualified health centers, rural health clinics, and in opioid treatment programs for the treatment of OUD. In the rule and subsequent guidance, we discussed the policies regarding the scope of benefits, physician certification and plan of treatment requirements, and payment policies. In terms of the scope of benefits, an IOP is a distinct and organized outpatient program of psychiatric services provided for individuals who have an acute mental illness or substance use disorder consisting of a specified group of behavioral health services that are paid on a per diem basis. Some of those items and services include individual and group therapy, occupational therapy, services of social workers, trained psychiatric nurses and other staff that are trained to work with psychiatric patients, drugs and biologicals, which cannot be self-administered, individualized activities, therapies, family counseling, patient training and education, and diagnostic services. Regarding the physician certification and plan of treatment requirements, physicians must determine that each patient needs a minimum of 9 hours of IOP services per week, and that determination must occur at least every other month. Regarding the IOP payment rates, we know that hospital outpatient departments and community mental health centers are paid IOP payment rates for 3 services and 4 or more services per day. And those rates are based on cost per day using OPPS data. For RHCs and FQHCs, the law specified that the payment rate is the same as under the hospital setting. RHCs and FQHCs are paid an IOP payment rate of $259.13 based on 3 services per day. We plan to review further whether a 4 or more services day may be applicable in the future. It's important to note that for FQHCs, the payment amount is the lesser of the FQHC's actual charges or the IOP payment rate. This is consistent with the payment rates under the FQHC PPS. For certain tribal FQHCs, payment is also based on the lesser of a tribal FQHC's actual charges or the Medicare outpatient all-inclusive rate established by the Indian Health Service. The law also requires that costs associated with IOP services are not used to determine the RHC AIR or the FQHC PPS payment amounts. IOP services furnished by OTPs are paid based on a weekly payment adjustment via an add-on code for the treatment of OUD. The payment rate for a minimum of 9 IOP services per week is $777.39. I will now turn it over to my colleagues in CMMI. Thank you.
My name is Colleen Barbero. I'm MDPP, Medicare Diabetes Prevention Program Model Lead. I'm here with Tina Cooley, our Outreach and Marketing Lead, to talk about the changes to our program in 2024. So I'll very quickly go through some background and then Tina will talk about the changes. Prediabetes is a very serious but very common problem. Many are at risk, but few are aware. Nearly half of adults age 65 and older have prediabetes. But only one in four adults age 65 and older with prediabetes are aware of their condition. And the prevalence is growing. Diabetes is expected to double by 2050 among adults. The disease burdens our nation with high cost. Diabetes costs